One thing that happened was the election that night.
Iceland's Independence Party has come out ahead after a parliamentary vote on Saturday, October 29th, followed by the Left Green Movement and the new anti-establishment Pirate Party, which came in third.
What went through your mind when you saw the results come in? You knew that they'd lost.
I was heartbroken for him. That long shot of escape into Iceland was at least a shot. But after that night, it was gone. And instead of the comfort of political asylum and a warm welcome from a prime minister in a new land, Chris was left with the daunting prospect of having to survive another frozen and brutal winter on the streets of Toronto. He tried to cover it up with bravado and would say, I don't mind the winter, I hate summers more, but I know deep down he was going out into the wilderness, and it was heartbreaking.
So Iceland turned out to only be escape plan number one.
Escape plan number two, Washington. After Trump's first election, Chris wrote to US Green Party leader Jill Stein, offering to give evidence to Congress on Russian election hacking and everything that he knew, all in return for a pardon. Jill Stein never responded.
Escape plan number three, Moscow. Turns out Commander X knows people in Moscow. He wants to join Snowden. At times, this plan involves being picked up by a submarine. Other versions of it have him canoeing from Alaska across the Bering Strait. This plan goes nowhere.
Escape plan number four, Ottawa. This escape plan means outing himself to the Canadian government. I made contact with an immigration lawyer at his request to see if a détente were possible with the Canadian authorities. When I report back to him, he freaked out, saying, why the f*** did you do that? I said, well, you asked me to. At this point, I think the winter's f***ing with his mind. He can't remember doing it. He says no. Cut off all communication. Don't go any further.
There was also a plan that somehow involved fleeing to Ecuador with Julian Assange. There was another one that was going to take him to Finland, where he'd be granted asylum.
The Finland plan, in order to execute that one, he would need 2 feet on the ground in Finland. That wasn't going to happen. And the Ecuadorian connection with Julian, that fizzled too when he realized that he wasn't going to be leaving London anytime soon. Finally, in the summer of 2017, Chris settled on a plan. He dubbed this mission Operation Golden Eagle.
All right. Good morning, everybody. It's the morning of September 18th, 2017. And this is Commander X sort of doing my... I guess it's becoming my Operation Golden Eagle.
The plan was to break into Mexico.
And this is quite an exciting anonymous operation, because this is the operation that's going to get me free.
Operation Golden Eagle. The plan, sneak across the Canadian border into the US. Somehow get across the US and then sneak across the border into Mexico. But remembering that he's a wanted man in the US and looking at up to 20 years in jail if he's caught.
Right now on my laptop, there on the desk, I am actually working on my petition for political asylum in Mexico. That's what that is right there. That's all of my rights under the United Nations. And then I have the Mexican Constitution, and I'm going to study those real hard.
After all the angst, wild talk of submarines to Russia, black op flights to Ecuador, and shady CSIS bargaining, in the end, Operation Golden Eagle went off without a hitch. Commander X walked across one border, caught a bus across the United States, and then marched through the desert and into Mexico.
You know, I've got to say, after all the twists and turns and Alice through the looking glass, this accomplishment, it feels a little bit anticlimactic.
True, but honest to God, it was a hell of a relief. After everything that came before, this was an amazing bout of good luck. And let's not forget Brass Bull. He travelled approximately 4,500 kilometres through a country where he was a wanted man and was threatened with decades in prison. That's Brass Bull, man.
Look, Ian, if this was anyone else's story, we might be done here. I mean, he's escaped. He's left Canada. He miraculously made his way through the States. He got to cross the border into Mexico.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Have English, thank you.
Yes, a little.
Oh, you have more than I have Spanish. One burrito, one latte. Perfecto, thank you so much.
So Chris had pulled off Operation Golden Eagle. He'd made it to Mexico. He was applying for political asylum based on his cyber activism.
Officials of the INM have accepted my petition material for political asylum and have granted me emergency refugee status.
But we know from the start of our show here, it doesn't end with that.
Well, around this time, I did actually manage to get the film off the ground. Ontario's public broadcaster, TVO, and director Gary Lang helped me line it all up.
You've been dreaming of this to come true. I mean, this was the ticket for Commander X. He was going to reconnect with the public. He was going to get some cash. This is fantastic. He must have been thrilled.
He was. We were. However,
of course, in this story, there's a however. Go on.
10 days after the film premiered, half a dozen U.S. agents scaled the wall of his compound and arrested him, flew him back to the United States.
Okay, just to be clear, U.S. agents basically invaded his home in Mexico, loaded him into a plane in the middle of the night, took him back to the U.S., threw him in jail, and Ian, I've got to put two and two together here, and I've got to wonder, did they see your film, because this happened 10 days after it aired, and did it actually reveal to them the location of this fugitive that they've been hunting for years?
I don't know if it revealed. It may have alerted them to his bravado. There was a part in the film where the question comes up, is he still wanted? One agent in the US says, they're after Koreans, Russians, and Chinese. Another agent says, someone would want Commander X's head on a wall. We could only presume the latter was correct.
So the film was made, and it was a thing you two had dreamt for all that time. The success of pulling it off was sort of a Faustian deal in the end. What did you think when you heard of his capture?
Horrified. And TVO were horrified as well. We clearly took some responsibility. What I do know is that this was not an operational f*** up on our part, the broadcaster's part, or Chris's part. That was all solid. I think it was more a case of he just poked the bear. And I recall his words. He would say to me, Ian, it's fine. This is all I want. I want to be able to get my message out to the public. I want to have my platform again. It's okay, man.
After a decade on the run, Commander X is in jail. He's facing multiple charges with sentencing guidelines that could add up to decades of prison time. But things had changed over the 10 years Commander X had been a fugitive. Much of the institutional fear around Anonymous had faded. New players had come along. Russian and North Korean hackers were now grabbing the headlines. In the end, the prosecution and defense struck a plea deal. Commander X pleaded guilty and was sentenced to and served just 1 year. He served a year, and that takes us to 2022, and he's out of jail, and he moves to downtown San Francisco.
Yeah, he's downtown San Francisco. He's relatively stable. He's got a roof over his head, and he's the most stable he's been for years. He's reading Buddhism, and it seems like he's shed his nom de guerre, Commander X. Then one day, he just goes offline.
Ian, that's where we started our story. You know, the story you've been telling us about the relationship you formed with Commander X. You started us off by telling us the story of how Chris went camping in Big Sur.
He went to Big Sur just when the atmospheric river floods happened and the ocean surges, and they all hit where he was camping.
Water everywhere, causing chaos across central California. Some 25 million are under flood warnings. The Kern River usually runs at about 6 feet. It's up over 17.
And then Chris disappeared? I mean, did you think he was alive?
I got one message that might have been him. I asked the obvious operational security question of, would you please tell me something that only you and I know? And the chat went silent. I feared the worst, so I could only presume from that it was someone who had his login details. I said to myself several times, if he's in trouble, he would reach out to me. If he were deliriously happy, he would reach out to me. And he hadn't. So again, that led me to fear the worst. That was then.
Ian, your that was then has me worried. No, worried's not the right word. It has me wondering, is there a coda, an epilogue? There always seems to be another twist in this story.
What I've just told you happened over 2 years ago.
And then?
Chris did get hold of me, but asked me to keep quiet about the fact that he was back. And given all that he's been through, I completely understood his wish to disappear.
But what did you think when you found out your friend was in fact alive?
I was beyond ecstatic. Rapturous.
Weren't you a little mad? Like, he let you think he was dead? Like, I understand the release, but...
Not at all. It is his business. He lives a complicated and complex life, and after everything he's been through, he owes me nothing. But there's still one more thing.
Of course.
I can say in all honesty that from all the weirdness that followed in his slipstream, I have turned off from his world. There's no Twitter, there's no Instagram, and I'm predominantly offline in my daily life, other than email and researching Count Dracula and Aleister Crowley. And I guess I have him to thank for that freedom. That being said, I found out in just the last week that he's back online and he's running a YouTube channel. He's focused on Buddhism.
Appreciate y'all being here. This is episode 12 and it's on Buddhist divination. We're going to look at a couple of different methods. One of them is sort of more traditional within Vajrayana Buddhism, and one of them is quite a bit newer and more Western.
Yeah, I guess you could say Commander X is dead, but long live Chris.
That's our Canada Land for this week. I hope you really enjoyed this episode. I can be emailed about it at jesse@canadaland.com, and I chat with our supporters and my colleagues at our Discord channel, which is available to all of our supporters. Tomorrow on Canada Land Politics, we're talking about Canada's bail system. Everybody seems to agree that we need a tougher bail system. But Canada has less crime than it used to, and more people are being held than ever before. What's going on? Tune in tomorrow. Noura is going to talk to Michael Spratt, a criminal defense lawyer. Oh, that's a smart guy. I've had him on before. He testified in front of the Justice Committee a few weeks before the Liberals tabled this bill, and they will talk to a repeat offender about what bail is really like. Today's show was written and presented by Ian Thornton and Bruce Thorson. Bruce Thorson is also our senior producer. Audio production and editing from Tristan Capicchione. Our fact check today is by Julian Abraham. Our director of audio is Max Collins. I am the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV, 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we're talking about the news. We will talk about China and India. Canada is trying to kiss and make up.
Our goal for Canada is to double our non-U.S. exports.
Wait for that. Hey, Jan Wong, welcome back to the show.
Hi.
You've said a couple times now that we're no longer on Team America and we're like this free agent, and that's not really true yet. We are in the gray zone here. According to the Globe and Mail, we still export 75% of our goods to the U.S. and like just a bit over 5% to China. This turmoil we're in with the States does not make that go away overnight. And now we've got Carney announcing that Canada is looking to double non-U.S. exports over the next decade. So that means we really need to fix our trade relations with big players like China and India for that to even be able to happen.
We're re-engaging with global giants India and China while we deepen our partnerships with our traditional allies. And to build on this momentum, I'm going to put it in context. Our goal for Canada is to double our non-U.S. exports over the course of the next decade, generating more than $300 billion more in trade.
Here's a piece I read in the Post by a guy named Joel Kotkin, who is the R.C. Hobbs Presidential Fellow in Urban Futures at Chapman University. And he wrote a book coming out called The Coming of Neo-Feudalism, A Warning to the Middle Class. He writes, Trump or not, the U.S. is a vastly better partner for Canada than China. Bending the knee to China would make Canada complicit partners in a growing alliance of autocratic powers. And he makes the argument that, like, kind of stick with the devil you know. Our relationship with America is very fraught right now, but it's still America. And if we think that China is going to treat us any better, we're nuts. And I think that the reality is that for all the elbows up bravado, what we're seeing from Carney is not somebody who is actually living out, you know, what he said, that the relationship with America is over. He is still very much trying to protect that relationship, and he comes back with his tail between his legs again and again because he hasn't gotten Canada a deal. So last time you and I talked, Jan, we said, wouldn't it be great if Canada dropped the tariffs on Chinese EVs in order to get China to drop tariffs on our canola, and we could actually just get in with the next ascendant power and replace America? And that has been talked about and suggested, and China wants that. And I've seen more and more people suggesting that, and it hasn't happened. And I think the reason why it hasn't happened is that it would absolutely put a thumb in Trump's eye, and there would be hell to pay for it.
So then the real question is, can you put a thumb in Trump's eye? How does he respond? So when he tried to put tariffs on China, China put a thumb in his eye and slapped tariffs back. He put in more, and China put in more. And Trump did another round, and China laughed at him and said, well, there's no trade right now. So that's one example of someone putting a thumb in. And to me, it worked. Everybody laughed. You have no idea how international trade works. You're crazy. It showed everybody he's crazy. What other option do we have if we don't do that? That's what I want to ask you, Jesse.
I don't know. And I actually got really scared reading this stuff. Omar Aziz, also writing The Globe. Again, there was a lot of coverage in this. This is his piece. We are on the cusp of a new world order. Canada must act decisively to shape it. The West has been preparing for and playing the wrong game with China. And that is why we're on the cusp of losing. And really, it's just about how we have to play our position and understand who we are. And who we are is like, we've got rare minerals. That's it. We've got metals. We've got like stuff that China needs. And whereas once we had beaver pelts and wood, and then later we had oil, now we've got some like weird metals that they need to make.
They need our gas. No, the thing is, worry about Trump for a relationship that is already destroyed. Our relationship is destroyed. I don't think it's a good idea for Canada to do nothing for the next few years, hoping that things will change if and when Trump decides to step down. He just bulldozed I think, the east wing of the White House.
Let's take a look at this. Demolition of part of the White House's east wing has begun. This is where the president is planning to build a new state ballroom.
It's unbelievable. You look at this and it's like he's doing it. And he bulldozed the relationship with Canada. So now we're in the rubble and people are saying, oh, no, we have to maintain our relationship with the U.S. It's gone. There is no relationship. You better move and start trading with China. But we don't have to stop criticizing them. And we definitely have to start putting up barbed wire around our democracy, because the Chinese interference in our elections is another thing. And we don't give any ground on that. We pass laws that force lobbyists to register. Otherwise, they go to jail, right? We need teeth. And we need to tighten up our nomination procedures for candidates. So close all the loopholes, put barbed wire around our democracy, but trade. China is going to be the ascendant power in the next 25 years. We are crazy if we don't get in now. And we are crazy now that the auto sector is getting killed by Trump, who clearly stated he doesn't want to build any cars in Canada.
We want to make our own cars. We don't really want cars from Canada.
Breaking news today. There will be a shutdown of the GM Cami assembly plant in Ingersoll, Ontario. Carmaker Stellantis said it will move planned vehicle production from its plant in Brampton to Illinois, sparking fears about the future of Canada's auto industry.
Yeah, we know Donald Trump definitely has our auto industry in his sights.
And it sounds like Carney is getting the message and trying to kind of like adjust the expectations of Canadians. We have the Toronto Star here reporting that Carney is signaling that auto tariffs are here to stay, at least for the near future. Here's the piece. Mark Carney admits broader trade deal with Donald Trump won't happen. So here from the piece, he gave his strongest signal yet that talks to lift the 25% auto tariffs will be punted to next year's review of the Canada-US-Mexico trade agreement.
Well, then, let's invite in South Korea. Let's invite in China. Come to Windsor and open up plants with us. And if Trump doesn't like it, well, he already doesn't like us. So what's going to happen? He's already not going to smile?
What you're saying is what the government of Canada is saying, that essentially,
I know, I'm sorry,
we can't afford to get on our high horse anymore. And so we're going to section it off. We are going to divorce trade relationships from all this other stuff. We're still going to be able to tell you that you're bad for human rights, and we're still going to be able to tell you lay off of foreign interference, and we're just going to put that in a separate category.
That's right. And if the U.S. asks us to extradite Meng Wanzhou, we're not going to do it anymore. Like, why? All this stuff we did for the U.S. got us in. That's what affected canola and pork and lobster. This is all the result of our wonderful, loving, brotherly relationship with the U.S. We are in deep with China now.
So here's my question. Am I racist?
Yes.
All right. That's our show. Am I racist for believing what I've been reading in the paper, which is that what you just said and what the government of Canada is saying is a Western fantasy, that in China, there is no separation of diplomatic gestures and accusations and human rights stuff from trade, that politics and trade, dividing that is just not a Chinese thing, that it's quid pro quo.
It's not a Communist Party thing.
Okay.
I would separate the government of China from Chinese people.
And if I do that, can I not be racist?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That was not looking good for me for a second there. That we are trying to put up very, like, comforting boundaries that make us feel better, but that is not how China works. And if
That's okay. We can still put up our boundaries.
Well, can we? Because do you think that anything about the thawing trade relationship is going to make China stop interfering in our democracy to favor their candidates or stop flooding our WhatsApp and who knows what else in order to spread whatever message they want to the diaspora community, or they're going to stop setting up police stations in Canadian malls?
That's how they operate. But we don't have to operate like that, right? We need that barbed wire. We want to trade, but we also have to put up barbed wire, right? It's like you have a shared drive with your neighbors, shared driveway, which is a weird Toronto thing. You can live with them. You can't let them encroach.
What you said about the ascendance of China I've been hearing about it for a long time, but man, I read this piece in Futurism, Western executives shaken after visiting China. Listen to this. So a bunch of like U.S. car executives and green energy guys went to China and they came back like, This originates with a report in the Telegraph. The executives are warning Americans that China's heavily automated manufacturing industry could quickly leave Western nations behind, especially when it comes to EVs. This is the CEO of Ford here, Jim Farley. We are in a global competition with China, and it's not just EVs. If we lose this, we do not have a future at Ford. And what gets described here is this recent trip to China where they're in factories and there are no workers. It's all robots and the lights are off because robots don't need light. It is a pitch black factory making cars without people. You get the sense of change, is the quote, where China's competitiveness has gone from being about government subsidies and low wages to a tremendous number of highly skilled, educated engineers who are innovating like mad. I want to read you this part. Some companies are giving up on new initiatives altogether. The founder of mining company Fortescue, Andrew Forrest, said that after his recent trip to China, he's abandoning attempts to produce EV powertrains in-house. He's just like, forget.
Yeah.
Like we are not catching up with these cats.
It was shocking. That article was shocking.
It really does sound like, you know, how the world, I think, just looked in awe at what America was up to after World War II, the industrialization and the technological leaps that were being made. And there's an inevitability to that. Like, tariffs do not hold back better cars. If somebody invents better things and cheaper ways of doing things, it changes the game. And you can put up some kind of a dam, and all you'll do is be isolating yourself from cutting-edge technology and putting yourself further back. You can't resist it. It's happening.
Right. You cannot stop the progress, and their cars are better. So instead of mourning the loss of the American auto industry, we should be now seeing it as an opportunity. Okay, let's move in now.
In that piece, the Ford CEO says that he got his people to get him one of these Chinese EVs, and he doesn't want to give it up. He's like, I'm driving it now.
Yeah, that was incredible. And that's what I try to tell friends, think, oh, Chinese stuff is crap. But they're so, like, last century. You're not in the 21st century. China has changed so fast, and they're so far ahead of us. People don't understand it, and that's partly because they kept out reporters for 3 or 4 years. They haven't been able to report on this.
It's staggering. If you want to have fun and get a little anxiety, spend a day just like looking at videos of various Chinese tech and furniture. Like they're taking it to the next level. It's wild stuff. I think what you're describing, Jen, or like recommending, is that Canada do what Steve Jobs did. This is what was called the innovator's dilemma. How do you come out with an iPhone that's going to cost you hundreds of millions of dollars in lost iPod sales? And the answer is, if you don't do it, somebody else is going to. You have to kill your own revenue stream in order to stay relevant. And so it's just harder to do when it's an entire country's economy.
I know, but Trump's helping us. No problem.
And maybe we'll find out where the line is, because we haven't found the place yet where America needs us more than we need America. If we actually were to say, F*** it. Like Lutnick made it really clear, Howard Lutnick, when he said, we're not buying cars from Canada anymore. It's over.
Lutnick told the audience, we should adopt an America first, Canada second policy when it comes to building cars, because the Trump administration wants to shift auto vehicle assembly to the United States.
So we could worry about a few thousand lost jobs at Stellantis, or Doug Ford could pour out the Crown Royal, and we could get mad at America for snatching up a few jobs here and there. But the future's not in auto manufacturing anyhow. It's over for North America in auto manufacturing. Look at this as an opportunity and say, okay, you know what? Do what you want to us. We are going to make deals and trade with people who want to be in business with us. And as much as you want to do business with us, we'll stay with you. And the short-term damage of that is going to be brutal if we were to take that path. It would be brutal. Whole industries would go down. But like in a 30-40 year window, it would be the right move.
I don't think it's going to take that long. Things move so fast now.
Yeah.
No, but it will be a brutal few years. It's not like we have a choice. There is no choice. And I don't think people realize that.
That is our show for today. Thank you for joining me. I can be emailed at jesse@canadaland.com. Always, I read them all. Jen Wong, where can people find you?
They can find me on my website,